20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hey friends, happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. This is your first time here. Thanks so much for joining us today. We are a 365-day year Packers podcast where we are going to talk all things Packers every single day of the year. Appreciate you guys checking us out. If this is your second, third, fourth, 1,000th time being here, well, we appreciate that as well. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, and give those 5-star reviews. Today is a great day because we get to talk about a Packers practice. Mini camp day one is officially in the books. We're going to go through all the details, the news, the minutiae, everything that happened at day one of Packers mini camp. Before we get there, just a quick shout out to Spiked Mocha for becoming an all new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Appreciate that a ton, Spiked Mocha. Hopefully you're enjoying all the extra stuff that comes along with being a Pack-A-Day Podcast member, including those members' Q&As. If you have not checked it out yet, make sure to do so. But right now we are going to dig and dive right into day one Packers mini camp. And we're going to start with obviously a topic that has taken over this week, and that is with Jaire Alexander. Normally would not talk about this when we're talking about a mini camp, but Brian Gutekunst did in fact talk about the entire Jaire Alexander situation during practice. So not a press conference before practice, not after practice, but actually during practice itself. I joked with Paul Brettel that they probably gathered us all over to talk to Goody, and we're running a bunch of trick plays out on the field while we weren't watching it because we're all listening to what Goody had to say about Jaire Alexander. But there wasn't a ton to take away from the overall conversation. Basically what he said was that they've tried to do the situation with Jaire these past few years where he was obviously having injury issues and kept trying to work through it, and it just wasn't working. The injury issues, and he said to no fault of anyone's, but basically were the huge issue here that caused them to ultimately decide to move away from Jaire Alexander. And, you know, he was asked at one point if, you know, the situation where teams just decided that, hey, at some point Green Bay is going to release him, so we don't need to trade for him. It was asked if that played a factor at some point. And Goody said at some point, you know, there may get to a point where teams are less enthusiastic about potentially giving up a pick if they start feeling like the player is going to get released anyway. And I've seen a lot of talk and discussion online about, hey, the Packers really screwed this up. Man, if they just would have been a bit more coy about their intentions of moving on from Jaire Alexander, they could have completed a trade and they would have got something in return. I disagree with that pretty vehemently for a couple different reasons. The biggest of which is they had a trade in place per multiple reports that the Packers had a deal and they were wanting Jaire to renegotiate his contract. Jaire would not do so and the deal fell apart. The moral of the story here is that the Packers did not want to pay Jaire $17.5 million, and no other team wanted to pay Jaire Alexander $17.5 million. Now, I'll gladly eat my words if Jaire gets $17.5 million or more this year on the open market. I'm pretty confident in saying I don't think I'm going to have to eat my words on this one. I just don't think any team was interested in him at that deal. And when it was evident that Jaire was not going to restructure his contract is when you saw the trade stuff die and Green Bay ultimately decide to move on. So they had a trade in place, again, per multiple reports. This wasn't like they played their hand the wrong way. It just was that teams were not willing to take on that contract. It was kind of as simple as that. And it's not surprising because Green Bay did not want to take on that contract either. And then I think just two, Brian Gutekunst and company deserve the benefit of the doubt when it comes to trading players. They got a ton in return for Aaron Rodgers, which was on a ridiculous contract at the time. And not only did the Jets just save Green Bay from that contract in general, but was able to get basically multiple second round picks out of that deal, a first round pick swap amongst other stuff. So Goody did great with that. Davante Adams getting a first and second round pick in that deal was really well done. So Goody has done his fair share of trades. He got return for Cole Van Lannen. He got return for Kamal Haddon. He got return for a variety of Josh Jackson. He got trades for players that really you could argue had no right having value in the trade market. And he found trades for those guys. So Goody knows how to work this. If he was not able to get any sort of value at all, even a conditional 2028 seventh round pick, which is basically the worst draft pick available. You can only trade 3 years in advance. So a 2028 seventh round pick conditional is the worst pick that you can possibly trade. If he couldn't even get that for Jaire Alexander, there was just not a market for Jaire Alexander. And you have to think too, that they were already having some conversations before they made it apparent, or it started to feel apparent, that they were going to move on in any real way. And it just, again, it never came to fruition. And I don't think that was anything that Green Bay did wrong in this particular circumstance. The one interesting aspect of the Jaire Alexander deal that, or the release, I should say, that took place that we heard today, Goody made mention in the presser that they were going to use some of the money that they had available this year in some transactions that were going to take place, which of course gets your mind percolating of like, are they signing somebody? Are they extending somebody? Like, what are they doing here? And they did not, well, they did sign somebody technically. We'll get to that in just a moment, but that was not what that salary cap space was used for. They did not do any extensions. What they did do is they took Jaire Alexander's dead cap hit, which it's post June 1st. So how that works, he's got 2 years left on his deal. Post June 1st, you get all of this year's dead cap on this year's cap and all of future dead caps on next year's dead cap. That's how it works when it's post June 1st. Green Bay, for some reason, went out of their way to get Jaire Alexander to redo his contract so that all of that dead money would hit in 2025 instead of any of it hitting in 2026. And I know what you're thinking. Green Bay has a bunch of extra salary cap space this year, and they have a bunch of free agents coming up next year. So this allows them to free up that money next year while taking that money on this year while they have a bunch of salary cap space. Seems logical, right? Except it isn't at all. And the reason that I say that is because we live in a world of carryover cap. I saw somebody post the other day questioning about this. It's a very simple concept. There's no, you know, sort of levers or pulleys or, you know, sort of crazy salary cap gymnastics that goes along here. Whatever you have left over in open salary cap space at the end of 2025 or at the end of a season carries over. You can choose to carry it over, which the vast majority of teams do, including Green Bay. They carry that salary cap space over into 2026. So yes, you are going to take on more money now and open up more money later, but it's just a shell game. You're going to be able to carry over any money that you would save now into the future anyway. So there's no benefit in doing that. In fact, most people would argue you're actually handcuffing yourself a little bit more in 2025. It won't matter for Green Bay because they have more than enough salary cap space, but you're giving yourself less flexibility now while not gaining any advantage in the future. So it's an interesting dynamic. Now, what I will say is there's no downside in doing this, and Green Bay is smart and Russ Ball is really, really smart. So while myself and Ken Ingles and the people over at Acme Packing Company and multiple other people that are really smart with this stuff, I'm not including myself in that group per se, but that look into this with the nerdiest of possible eyes and details, nobody yet that I have seen has been able to figure out any sort of reason why this would make sense. Somebody did point out in the chat, on the live chat, however, that maybe with with Roger Goodell talking about maybe closing some of these loopholes, like maybe Green Bay has some sort of inkling of a rule change that's coming, which would be beneficial for Green Bay to do this sort of move. But either way, Green Bay, I'm sure, has a good reason for doing it. But on the surface, there doesn't seem to be one. So do with that what you will. We don't need to spend any more time on that other than me getting to nerd out about that for a couple seconds. But that's the gist of what Brian Gutekunst talked about. And you know, ultimately, again, the end of the Jaire Alexander era in Green Bay. The other really big piece of news, which really big, your mileage may vary on just how huge of a piece of news this is, but it's certainly one that took the social media world by storm. And even Pat McAfee was playing the clip that I took on his show yesterday. Bo Melton. Bo knows defense. Bo Melton was working out at corner for Green Bay. Now, when asked after practice, Matt LaFleur basically stated, he was asked whether this was due to necessity or whether this was something that they had planned on doing and wanted to try out. He said it was a little bit of both. From a necessity standpoint, Jaire Alexander was released, but more importantly, Micah Robinson and Kalen King were both unavailable to practice. I want to be very clear on one thing, because I get that this all is happening on one day. The Jaire Alexander release has less than zero to do with Bo Melton getting a chance at corner at minicamp. All right, so let's state the obvious right there. This is not, the Packers did not in their offices go, you know what, we're going to release Jaire Alexander, but instead of using any of that salary cap space or spending an early pick on somebody or anything like that, we're going to take our number five or number six wide receiver, move him to corner, and that's going to basically be our Jaire Alexander. It has nothing to do with one another other than the fact that Jaire plays corner, other than the fact that it happened in a similar timeline of Jaire being released and Bo Melton getting this move to corner. It has nothing to do with one another. If Jaire was there practicing, they decided to keep him on the contract, that Bo Melton move still would have taken place. So let's start with that right then and there. This had a lot more to do with Micah Robinson and Kalen King not practicing, which we'll talk about, and less to do with anything Jaire Alexander related. The one big note that I want to make here is that Bo Melton is not moving from wide receiver to corner. That has been a move, just not wide receiver to corner, but the position move has been something that has not worked out very well in Green Bay. James Looney moving from defensive tackle to tight end. Did Bronson Cafusi, I think, maybe make a switch to at some point? Either way, it doesn't matter. Alex Magoo moving from quarterback to wide receiver. There have been numerous other ones as well. Those have not gone great. They have not worked out. You might point to Sam Shields. Sam Shields transitioned from wide receiver to corner in his last year in college. So that was not exactly the same, although there is at least some precedent of moving from wide receiver to corner. Of course, you've got Travis Hunter in Jacksonville that can play both ways. Troy Brown, the New England Patriots wide receiver, made that transition to corner very late in his career. So these are things that actually have happened in the past. And this is a position that you have seen a wide receiver play a corner from time to time. It's rare, but it happens. Of course, Charles Woodson was a player in college who was able to play corner and wide receiver. Whether or not Bo Melton can make that transition successfully, and I actually am going against myself. I don't mean to say transition from wide receiver to corner, but add that job description to his resume. That remains to be seen. He didn't look like a complete fish out of water. Looked like he couldn't play it at minicamp on Tuesday. So that's a good start. There's a lot of benefit here from Green Bay trying this out for both the Packers and for Bo Melton. From a Packers point of view, if Bo Melton does in fact make the team, if you can have a player on your 48-man game day roster, because remember you got a basically 70-man roster, 53 plus 16 for the practice squad plus an international pathway player. You've got a 70-man roster in season, 53-man active roster, 48-man game day roster. You've only got so many players that you can actually activate on game day. And if you have one of those players who can legitimately give you reps at wide receiver, who is one of your more prolific special teams players, meaning he's on coverage units, he can be on the return unit, he can do a lot of different things on teams, and he can be a number five or number six corner for you as well, that gives you a lot of depth and flexibility for one player that he can do so many different things on a game day roster. So for Green Bay's point of view, if they can cross-train him on something and get a little bit more flexibility there, makes a lot of sense. For Bo Melton, it makes all the sense in the world that he would add more value to what he can bring to Green Bay as he is fighting for his life to try to find a roster spot with this crazy depth chart that exists at wide receiver in Green Bay that includes five players that are locks to make the team barring a trade, including Romeo Doubs, Dontayvion Wicks, Savion Williams, Matthew Golden, and Jaden Reed. You've got five that are locks, and Christian Watson, who remains ahead of schedule and is going to come back at some point, that's going to make it six locks to make the team. So guys like Bo Melton, Mecole Hardman, Malik Heath are going to see the writing on the wall. And hey, the more that you can do, the better odds that you can find a way onto your active or the 53-man roster and maybe even active on game days. So for the Packers, it makes sense. And for Bo Melton, it makes a ton of sense to try to add some value as you get into training camp and then eventually into cutdown time to say, hey, you should probably keep me because I can play offense, defense, and special teams. So it benefits both. Reminder that his brother, Max Melton, is a corner who was taken in the top 50 in the draft in 2024. And, obviously, I shouldn't have to say this, but I saw people when I tweeted this out, I saw people be like, well, that means that Patrick Mahomes' brother should probably be on a team. I'm not obviously saying that. or that Derek Watt would have also been a great pass rusher because TJ and JJ were. It's not that simple. I get it. I'm not saying it, but these are two brothers that are very similar in their athletic build and their athleticism. And one of them is a, you know, top corner that was taken in the top 50 of the draft. And Bo Melton is, again, same, like basically like height, weight, speed, everything like that. In fact, Bo Melton is a over 90th percentile relative athletic score at corner. So there is some bloodline relation to a corner in the NFL right now in his brother, Max Melton. And it's noteworthy that, again, the Packers are trying to take Bo and transition him over into that corner room. All right. Again, elite relative athletic score at corner. Didn't look half bad. Brother plays the position and again, adds more value to what Bo Melton can potentially bring to the team. I don't know where this goes from here. We'll see if it just is a mini camp experiment and it dies there and maybe nothing comes of it. He did go out with the ones at wide receiver still. He did go out with the ones as a defensive back, as a cornerback. And again, there was one play. It wasn't like full speed or anything like that, but he was covering Jaden Reed on the play, trailed him near perfectly, like looked like a corner. Wasn't like anything that you looked at and you're like, what is going on here? No, he looked the part legitimately. So I'm intrigued. Nothing else. I'm intrigued. And again, don't correlate the Jair stuff to this. Don't like, it's just one player right now that is trying to make a move that gives him a little bit more versatility. And it's an interesting concept because like people are, what is Goody doing? You're taking a wide receiver to try to fill this corner. To me, there's no harm and no foul in this. It's just giving a player an opportunity to see if he can go out and prove it. The Packers said that they saw some things on special teams that would maybe think that Bo Melton could go out and play a aggressive, physical enough, you know, brand of football to play on defense. So I love the creative thinking on this. Give it a shot. If it doesn't work, who cares? But give it a shot. And if there is something there and if he can do it, awesome. More power to the Packers, more power to Bo Melton. I'm all for this. We'll be right back. I just want to add one more thing on top of this to the cornerback room. I talked about this in the live Q&A. Because people are wondering about this corner room. So the other thing that Goody talked about was that they feel really great about their top three corners, Keyshawn Nixon, Carrington Valentine, and Nate Hobbs. And then he said like the next group of players, including Haddon, Micah Robinson, Kalen King, those guys are going to have to step up and take that next spot and really sort of own it. I see people like, why isn't Green Bay spending money and going out and getting a corner right now and all these sort of things, right? Let me just say this. As we talked about the other day, that the season is 90 days away. We hear from Goody and company all the time talking about in order for young players to get better, they need opportunity. Right now, as you kick off training camp in about 6-7 weeks, Kamal Haddon, Kalen King, Micah Robinson are going to be granted opportunity to earn potentially the number 4, 5, and 6 corner spots on this roster. But they're going to have to earn it. But Green Bay has clearly thought very highly of this young group of corners that are after their top three. They've talked about it in the past. They've backed it up with their actions. And the other thing that I'll say here is that Jair Alexander played 300 snaps this past year and really none in the second half of the year. This was a corner group that consisted primarily of Keyshawn Nixon, Eric Stokes, and Carrington Valentine with Javon Bullard playing in the slot this past year. You're going to have Keyshawn Nixon. You're going to have Javon Bullard playing in the slot. You're going to have Carrington Valentine and Nate Hobbs being a massive, massive upgrade over Eric Stokes. You have already improved that room. Where, you know, people want to jump to the conclusion of like, you need to replace, you're like, they're trying to replace Jair Alexander with Kamal Haddon and Kalen King and Micah Robinson. You're not. You're replacing Corey Ballantyne and Robert Rochelle right now with Micah Robinson, Kalen King, and Kamal Haddon. That's who you're trying to replace, not any of the players that actually played this past year. If Nate Hobbs is healthy, he'll eat all of the snaps that Stokes and Jair played combined this past year. So you're not really trying to replace that. You're just trying to replace some of the backup guys. And at some point, you recognize what Corey Ballantyne and Robert Rochelle are. They're, you know, 5th, 6th corners that don't really have any starting level upside. So you take Kamal Haddon and Kalen King and Micah Robinson and say, hey, at worst, I think we can make another Robert Rochelle, Corey Ballantyne tandem out of this. And maybe, just maybe, we find somebody that has a little bit more upside and can actually turn into a starter at some point. And To add on top of that, if you get through training camp and those three are gifted the opportunity to go out and compete for those spots, and you have injuries at the top three, or the fourth, fifth, and sixth guys just don't perform, they don't look good in preseason or whatever, you can still go out and add players. The roster building season is not dead as of today. There are still going to probably be some players, some veteran corners that are out there that you could potentially look at as you get closer to the start of the season. And there is going to be cutdowns where you could potentially claim a corner. You could sign a corner off of a practice squad at some point. You could trade for a corner, just like Green Bay traded for Malik Willis a season ago at the cutdown time. They could look at a corner that, you know, some team is willing to move on from and trade a sixth, seventh round pick for a corner that could come in and help the team. They could add somebody of, you know, like one of the, what is it, UFL now players like Damon Arnette, who is a former first round pick who's out there. They could try that. They could, again, do so many different things to add a corner towards the end of cutdowns and get to that point and go in that direction at that time. This is not a hard and fast, they have to add a corner right now. There is not a game coming up this weekend. If there was, yeah, maybe they want to look at something different, but there's not. They have plenty of time. And I think the really great thing here is that they're going to have time in camp and through mini camp to evaluate these young corners and figure out if they have something there. If they do, you probably don't need to add anything. And if you don't, you can still add something later on in camp if you actually need to go down that direction. So no panic as of yet. Let those young players play. If they look the part, awesome. If they don't, course correct. And we know Goody will be willing to do that because he's done it in the past. And by the way, Goody has found Keyshawn Nixon on a one-year nothing contract, Rasul Douglas off of a practice squad. You know, even guys like Corey Ballantyne, who was able to come in and step in a pinch. Like, he has found these guys over and over and over again. So let's not panic just yet. And let's see what this corner room actually looks like when they take on the Lions in week one, not on June 11th. The other sort of interesting note from practice is that Donovan Jennings was the starting left guard. Now, Aaron Banks was out. We'll talk about attendance in just a moment. But Aaron Banks was out. Elton Jenkins was out. And now you end up in this situation where you had Rasheed Walker, by the way, which is the next big note here. Rasheed Walker was not actually the starting left tackle. It was Jordan Morgan that was getting the reps with the ones at left tackle. So Jordan Morgan at left tackle. At left guard, you ended up with Donovan Jennings. Center was Jacob Monk. At right guard, you had Sean Ryan, and then at right tackle, you had Zach Tom. So it was Donovan Jennings at left guard, which is very noteworthy because he was in over Anthony Belton, the second round pick. More on that in just a second. He was in over Travis Glover, who went in the playoff game a year ago against Philly at guard. He was in against over Kadeem Telford, who also went in last year against Philly at guard and had played multiple snaps at guard a season ago. So they bypassed all of those players for Donovan Jennings. Now, before you get to like, oh, Anthony Belton bust, this is just them taking a young player and keeping him at one spot. They've made him primarily a tackle so far, so he's practicing there. Don't read into that. But what I will say is you would think that that would mean something, right? So I asked Matt LaFleur about it in the press conference following practice. I said, hey, I know that we're not supposed to read too much into who's with what group or whatever, but I know Donovan Jennings was with the ones today. And he stopped me right there. And he's like, truthfully, I didn't even know that. Your skepticism may vary on if he's telling the truth or not. I tend to believe that he actually was, that he was not even paying attention to it. It was probably something that came down from Steno or Butkus or someone that they just put Jennings in that spot. Maybe they just wanted to look at him, see how would he respond. Like that can happen. And sometimes an offensive line coach just wants to throw a guy in there and say, let's see what he does. Let's see how Donovan Jennings plays with the ones today. It could have been something as simple as that. They could have picked a number out of a hat for all I know. But Matt LaFleur had no knowledge of it. And basically, again, said, don't read anything into it, even though I prefaced it with that and said, listen, what I've been saying is they're playing patty cake up there. He said, listen, there's no pads on, there's no everything, which of course I get and I know. But you know, he went on to say some, you know, kind words about Jennings at the end, but clearly he wanted me to know and everyone to know that there was nothing more to read into this, which maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I don't think they would have put JJ Lippy in that spot. I don't know that they would have put, so they did put Jennings. If I were Donovan Jennings and I went home from practice that day, I'd be like, hey, got to work with the ones today. And if I were Travis Glover and Kadeem Telford, I'd be like, oh man, this is already a really tough group to break. Now, Donovan Jennings is getting reps with the ones, but Maybe it means absolutely nothing. Maybe that is the case, but it was noteworthy nonetheless. As I mentioned, Jordan Morgan was starting at left tackle. From an attendance standpoint, Nesta, Jade Silvera, Nate Hobbs, and Warren Brinson were all back in practicing, so that was a good sign. Specifically, Hobbs back from his personal issue, Warren Brinson practicing for the first time as a member of the Packers. At least that was open to the media. Savion Williams was still wearing the red no contact jersey. Sounds like it's a shoulder injury that has been keeping that red jersey on him. The 10 players who were not practicing, allegedly, apparently, all players were at practice. So all 89 players that were on the roster going into the day were at Lambeau Field at practice in some capacity. The 10 players who didn't practice were Aaron Banks, who we saw, Quay Walker, who we did not see, Zane Anderson we saw, Julian Hicks we saw, Colin Oliver we saw, John Williams we did not see, Elton Jenkins, Kalen King, who had a cast on, Matt LaFleur said he'd be ready by training camp, Micah Robinson, and Christian Watson. The two players we, at least I did not see, and I tried to ask around, and I don't think anyone else saw them, were Quay Walker and John Williams. Per Packers PR, John Williams has an injury situation that he's dealing with. It's interesting that he's not with the rehab group and that we didn't really see him at all, but apparently he is dealing with some sort of injury issue. As far as Quay Walker goes, not really any clarity that we've received on what's going on with Quay. Whether this is just injury, whether this is contract related, or whether it's both, or something else entirely. We know that Quay was at the first OTA practice that was open to the media, just doing rehab stuff. Week two, we did not see him. I think we, you know, assumed that he wasn't there. Maybe he was there like he was apparently at minicamp, but just not present to the media when we were there, but didn't seem like he was there in week two. And then on minicamp yesterday, nobody has, as far as I know, located him. I don't know, again, if this is contract related or injury related, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on. We'll see if we can get a little bit more clarity from Matt on what's going on with Quay. And if we find anything out, certainly I'm sure the beat guys will be tweeting it out and I'll be talking about it tomorrow if we get a little bit more of an update on that. Packers did sign a new defensive tackle. Cameron Young was a 2023 fourth round pick by the Seahawks, played in 17 career games, had a 6.33 relative athletic score coming out of college, but with some really poor agility scores. 6'3", 304, had a 58.8 grade in 2023 on 201 snaps, only played in two snaps in 2024 before going down with an injury. The Seahawks cut him. The Packers are now bringing him in, and he adds to that defensive tackle depth at the moment. We'll see if he can make a name for himself, get in the conversation at all, but right now, more probably preseason depth than anything else. We'll be right back. Let's talk about some two-minute drills. Packers started at their own 30-yard line. There's a minute and change left, one timeout, first and 10, and they were down by 7. So they started with the twos, then with the ones, and then with the threes. I'm actually going to start with the threes here because it ended with the play of the day. You had Sean Clifford checking it down to White, the running back, the undrafted free agent running back. Then Clifford overthrew Cornelius Johnson. Then a throwaway. And then Clifford to Messiah Swinson on fourth down to get a big first down. Clifford deep to Ben Sims. I couldn't tell if Ben Sims just didn't get a good jump on it. It looked like maybe it was going to be there, but Sims did not really go up to get it in any real way. Not sure what happened there, but either way, it was probably a little bit overthrown, but incomplete to Ben Sims. Then Clifford hit Cornelius Johnson, who went up high to get it, came down with it, picked up a first down over the middle of the field. Then Clifford was behind Sam Brown over the middle of the field, incomplete. Then a Clifford dime to Malik Heath down the sideline over Isaiah Dunn, got them inside the 5-yard line. Then you had Randolph, the defensive tackle, bat down a Sean Clifford pass. Then Sean Clifford incomplete low into the sideline on the right side, probably for the best because he would have been down probably at the 1-yard line, but the clock would have ran. He wasn't going to get out of bounds. Then James Esther came up with a sack and the clock is ticking. They have no timeouts left. And Clifford's able to get the ball, you know, with 1 second left on the clock. He immediately gets some pressure. He rolls out to his left, just throws one up in the end zone. Mecole Hardman goes up, one-handed catch, makes the catch, comes down with it for what likely would have been the game-tying touchdown right at the end of the end of the practice. It was the last play of the practice, but the end of that drill. So Unbelievable play by Mecole Hardman. Great drive by Sean Clifford, able to get them down there and then throw that touchdown at the end. A little bit of luck from Clifford's standpoint that he literally just put it up there, but Hardman came down with it, paid it off. Not the biggest guy in the world, but kudos to Hardman for coming down with that one. The number ones in that same 2-minute drill, Love hit Tucker Kraft for 8 yards. Love to Jacobs for a first down and Jacobs got out of bounds. Love to Jaden Reed for 10 yards, timeout. Love to Tucker Kraft for 7 yards. Then Love hit Brooks for a check down. Brooks dropped it. It was probably better. It was not on purpose, but it's probably better. The clock would have ticked that it would not have been worth it for what he was going to pick up. So probably best that Brooks dropped that one. Then Love to Malik Heath for a big gain down to the 10-yard line. That was a big play on the drive. And then Green Bay spiked the ball. And then you had Love to Hardman over the middle of the field. Hardman cuts back, runs into the end zone, touchdown, but they call them down. It's two-hand touch. Also, the play to Kraft a couple plays earlier. Kraft would have got out of bounds in a game, but because it's basically two-hand touch in this situation, they called him down and ran the clock. Kraft gave the referee, the fake referee, a hard time after that play. And then, of course, Mecole Hardman getting stopped at the 2 and the time running out from there. They couldn't get off another play. So the defense technically won that one, but it was a great drive from Jordan Love. Only 2 incompletions, one of which was the drop by Chris Brooks, and then one of them was the spiked ball. So a really nice drive from Jordan Love overall, but technically was not able to get them in the end zone. As far as the number twos, Baron Sorrell started that drive with a sack. Then Willis hit Cornelius Johnson. Then Willis to Emmanuel Wilson. Willis to Ben Sims. Then Willis overthrew Mecole Hardman down the field. Omar Brown had good coverage. Willis deep to Sam Brown on a diving catch. They had already exhausted their timeout. They tried to get up to the line to spike the ball. Malik Willis was very wise in this situation. So Malik Willis got the ball with 1 second left. And I've seen this happen, especially in college football a lot. But you get the ball with 1 second, you spike it, that second ticks off, and the game is over. Malik Willis recognized that if he tried to spike it, the game was going to be over and that they weren't going to be able to do anything. So Malik Willis goes back, and I don't know if he faked the spike or not, but just went back to pass. I think only one receiver went out for the route because they recognized it as well. But Willis was smart not to spike it because, again, the game just would have been over. Unfortunately, the offense really didn't know what was going on, and Willis ended up being sacked. But I like the wherewithal from Willis to just get the ball and not try to spike it because, again, it would have been for nothing. You know, he did get sacked on the play, so it doesn't ultimately matter anyway. But I like the wherewithal from Malik Willis in that situation to still try to do something because, again, just spiking it would have done absolutely nothing in that situation. The game would have been over anyway. It was an interesting day for the trio of wide receivers that might be fighting over that number 6 spot. Bo Melton, Malik Heath, and Mecole Hardman. Bo Melton made the move to corner, looked pretty decent doing it, and now has multiple position versatility and was playing both wide receiver and corner throughout the course of the day. That certainly adds value to Bo Melton as he tries to make that spot and now potentially can play offense, defense, and special teams. Malik Heath had 2 big-time catches in the 2-minute drills, one with the ones, one with the threes, to help set up his team. So that was a great sign for Malik Heath. And then Mecole Hardman came up with a one-handed crazy catch with the threes to get the lone touchdown in the 2-minute drill. So some really great competition already between those three. We'll see how the wide receiver room shakes up over time, but those are 3 talented players that are fighting it out potentially for 1 spot on the back of the wide receiver roster. Jordan Love, I thought overall had a nice day. Successful 2-minute drill, even if they didn't end up in the end zone in that situation. Also had a couple nice seam shots and 7-on-7s to Jaden Reed and John Fitzpatrick. And also had a really nice back shoulder throw to Romeo Doubs. Probably a better catch by Doubs than a throw by Jordan on that play, but put it where Doubs could get it. Doubs turned his head just in time, located the ball, slid down, made a crazy sliding catch for the back shoulder play. But that was a nice connection as well. I thought overall, again, Jordan had another very nice day. One player who stood out to me was Tyron Hopper. There was a couple plays he broke up a pass, and then he closed really fast. I mean, really fast on a play to the outside. He looks good. He looks really, really good from just a height, weight, speed, like athleticism standpoint. I'm really intrigued to see what he looks like when the pads come on and if he gets a real opportunity with that linebacker group to maybe get this start in a 4-3 base defense. But I'm liking what I'm seeing out of Tyron Hopper in year 2 so far. He's one to keep an eye on. I know, obviously he was probably a little bit overdrafted in the 3rd, but overall I like what I've seen so far from Hopper and specifically in this practice. Your starting lineup for the day was Jordan Love at quarterback, Jordan Morgan at left tackle, Jennings at left guard, Donovan Jennings at left guard, Jacob Monk at center, Sean Ryan at right guard, and Zach Tom at right tackle. Josh Jacobs was your running back. Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave were your tight ends. Dontavian Wicks and somebody were your wide receivers. I could not catch who the second wide receiver was. On defense, it was LVN and Gary at ends, Wyatt and Clark at defensive tackle, Cooper, McDuffie, and Simmons at linebacker, Nixon and Hobbs at corner, and Williams and McKinney at safety. Some miscellaneous special teams notes. Brandon McManus made all of his field goals for the day. Xavier McKinney, Edrian Cooper, and Nate Hobbs were on kick coverage. So again, I stress to you, starters are going to play on teams as well. And Xavier McKinney, Edrian Cooper, and Nate Hobbs all getting first reps with the kick coverage units. Also, Savion Williams, while not actually returning kicks, was down with the kick return group. I would assume maybe when that red jersey comes off, he'll get an opportunity at that. But he was at least down there observing it, even if he did not get a rep as a kick returner. That is basically everything that I had from Packers minicamp. We did get our first glimpse of Aaron Rodgers as a Pittsburgh Steeler. And last but not least, congratulations to Aaron Rodgers, as he apparently was recently married, and that ring on his finger was in fact a wedding ring. Do with that what you will. I don't have any other commentary on that other again than to congratulate Aaron on his recent marriage. No other final thoughts today. Again, interesting with Bo Melton moving to corner, or I should say getting some cross training at corner. Again, Goody talking about the release of Jaire Alexander, Donovan Jennings starting at left guard, Morgan starting at left tackle. Obviously the big 2-minute drill catch by Mecole Hardman. That was interesting. And again, Tyrone Hopper looked good. That's kind of your recap. We went over everything. Nothing else really I wanted to get to today. Thank you so much for being here. Day 2 of minicamp today on Wednesday. I will be there. I'll break it all down for you. 2 p.m. on YouTube. I will be doing a live Q&A and just kind of recap of everything happened that happened at minicamp. And then I'll have another episode for you guys on Thursday, breaking down again everything that happened at day 2 of Packers minicamp. That's going to do it for me today. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members. Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donnelly, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Conner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Enjoy day 2 of mini camps from afar, at least, or on the social media standpoint, or maybe just here on the Pack a Day podcast. I'll see you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.